Oh, God. John.
Adam, what's happening? What's happening?
This is going to disappoint everyone.
What's that?
Well, I mean, last week we had, you know, we had Mr. Tony Weinbender from the Fest on the show, and he talked for hours, it seemed, and everything he said was super interesting and insightful and candid to the point where he probably got us into trouble. And now all those people that tuned in to hear that are gonna get you and me this week.
But we can do them one better, because we have an exclusive track from a punk rock legend. Exclusive. Hasn't been heard since like 1980. And I will not reveal that artist till later on in the podcast. So make sure you listen out there, all you wonderful, beautiful podcast listeners.
Oh, we've lost like 30% of them already. Okay, let's play the theme music. This is something by Nightbirds, as it usually is. We'll be back in a sec. This is the Punk News Podcast for the week of October 1st. Wow, October 1st, 2013. Back in a sec.
It's the haunting season. Woo!
All right, welcome to the Punk News Podcast Roundtable. I'm Adam White, recording in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Coming to us from the land of no functioning government. I don't even really understand how you still have internet in that case. John, from...
Oh, actually, I'm running it off a diesel-powered generator. It's basically like the Thunderdome down here. I've been riding around like a... macked up, you know, a monster truck with like blades on the sides. I'm wearing all leather. I've got a mohawk, and we're battling with like Uzis and machine guns and stuff. Mel Gibson was driving down the street a little while ago, but he's making anti-Semitic remarks, so I didn't confront him because, you know, nobody wants to hang out with that dude.
I'm surprised you didn't have to like go offshore on a boat or something to like get into international waters so you could, you know, communicate with the outside world. Because, well, I mean, as far as we're concerned, it's just like America went dark.
Well, technically, because the government shut down, I'm right now in the nation of Jandia. So I'm the monarch of Jandia. It's pretty sweet.
You can just like declare that you're one of those what's it called? Freemen of the land? Is that the movement? Where you just like
I'm actually saying I'm a dictator for the 3 acres that I occupy. Mm. I've got a flag and everything. I've got an army. I've got my it's pretty sweet. I've got an army, I've got some PR people. I'm just waiting for like my harem to roll in, like Idi Amin and stuff. I assume they'll be coming in any moment now. They just haven't shown up yet.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, punk rock anarchy at its finest, right? You guys just do whatever the fuck you want now, and yeah. At least you don't have any of that pesky healthcare to worry about, eh? Whew, dodge the bullet.
Well, what's nice about Jandia is right now we've got 100% healthy population, so that's always something good to look for. Also, we've got 0% incarceration. We've got 0% incidents of domestic violence within the past 30 years. So the nation of Jandia is doing pretty well these days.
Hmm.
And 100% of our population has either postgraduate schooling or higher, which is pretty good. So I mean, I only see things getting brighter over here, out here in Jandia. So stick that in your pipe and smoke it, Canada.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, if you want like an embassy up here, I got a couch.
Yeah, my couch. I mean, your couch would now be my embassy, and I can't wait till like one of my citizens does something illegal in your country, so they run to your couch for political asylum. That'd be pretty sweet.
Which is. Yeah, which is a totally fine use for the couch, because we're not really using it these days. So why not make it an embassy of your little tin cup dictator nation that you've created for yourself?
It's a pull out bed couch, because I could really use one of those as my embassy.
It's not, but right, you're a small country, so these things gotta build. Bouncing Souls. So. That was my great seg. I'm just going to yell at the name of a band. In a move that really makes all the sense in the world, Hot Water Music's drummer George Ribello has joined the Bouncing Souls. He replaces the former Souls drummer Mike McDermott, who left the band in June after being with them for 13 years. His first show as a Souls drummer was on Thursday night of last week at Ashbury Lanes in Ashbury Park, New Jersey. It's Asbury, isn't it? I said Ash.
No, Asbury. Asbury.
Asbury.
Lane.
See? Yeah. I can't even pronounce things in your lawless, godless. Anyways, a few fans have posted photos and short videos of the show that you can find on Instagram. And there's a link to that on the org. So the Soul's next release is to be a split with the Menzingers. It comes out on November 5th, 2013. Any thoughts about this, John? George joining the Souls?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not a huge fan of either of these bands, but I respect them both. I particularly respect Bouncing Souls. I think Bouncing Souls are kind of just like a good classic style. I mean, they're not classic style punk rock in the sense of like Sex Pistols or The Clash, but a good classic, I guess, 80s, early 90s style American punk rock band. And George Rebello has been making the rounds that he was in Against Me. He was in, well, Hot Water Music, like everybody knows. And so he's a competent drummer. I don't know if he particularly has enough energy or boom bapness for my particular taste, but I think he'll fit in well with Bouncing Souls.
Well, I mean, the Souls and Hot Water Music have been chumming along together for so many years at this point.
I wanted to know that. There's like a connection between those two bands?
Yeah, I mean, they toured together quite extensively for a while. They were playing each other's songs. I don't know if they ever actually had a split that they did. I'm totally blanking on it, and I'm sure I shouldn't be, you know, blanking on these super obvious things and then Googling them as I slowly talk while we're on the show. But yeah, okay, sorry, they had a split 7-inch that came out, that's why. Where they were doing each other's songs. So there's they've had like a fair amount of camaraderie in the past, you know, kind of like in the past few years. Really more so than you would have suspected when, you know, when the Souls were a young Epitaph band and Hot Water Music was doing their No Idea thing, like the connection wasn't necessarily there. But I think as Hot Water Music developed into like more of a, you know, straight ahead punk rock band and less of a whatever you'd call the No Idea sound, I don't want to say emo, that they were doing in their early records, it makes a lot more sense that like there's a lot of like sonic connections between them. But yeah, those guys have been friends and touring together for a long time, so I guess it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Hot Water Music is sort of like, since they're a reunion, an erratic touring machine anyways, so it you know, George is going to be free to do this kind of stuff, so it's not like he's on the road with Hot Water Music all the time.
Very true. You know, I mean, honestly, it's a I don't think anybody can really object to this. I mean, he's certainly a competent drummer. Some people would say he's a great drummer, and I think he'll go well with the band. So what else can you say aside from just that it's a good matching, and both bands are sort of on the same level, like money and fame wise. So nobody's going to get, you know, disappointed with the income coming in or you know, or beefs between the people. And honestly, I think George Rebello is probably a pretty easy guy to get along with. Even though he didn't last on Against Me for too long, it didn't seem like they had bad feelings as opposed to a couple of their other drummers. It just seemed that, like, you know, they had a set time for him to drum with them, and then once the time was up, he moves on to other projects. So
yeah, and that was the impression that I got on that one, too. So you want to change gears a little bit. You want to tell us about the latest on the Pussy Riot stuff?
Yes. Until earlier today, Ned... Well, one of the just to rewind, a little while ago, I guess about a year and a half ago now, three members of Pussy Riot, or more than three members, were arrested for doing a sort of a protest in a church. Two of them went to jail. One of them, I guess, either got parole or got off the hook. One of the one that went to jail is a young lady named Nazhita Talakhanivkova. She went on a hunger strike, basically to protest the conditions that she's in. She's basically working in like a sweatshop. It sounds pretty brutal. Here's what she said. My brigade in the sewing shop works 16 to 17 hours a day from 7:30 a.m. till past midnight. At best, we get 4 hours of sleep a night. We have had a day off once a month and a half. Just recently, a young woman got stabbed in the head with a pair of scissors because she didn't turn in a pair of pants on time. Another tried to cut her own stomach open with a hacksaw. They stopped her. I will not eat until the administration starts obeying the law and stops treating incarcerated women like cattle ejected from the realm of justice for the purpose of stoking the production of the sewing industry until they start treating us like humans. Just breaking news just coming in today. After 9 days, or I think it's about 9 days, she ended her hunger strike today because she almost died. She hadn't eaten for 9 days. So, I mean, the point is, just goes to highlight how, I guess, brutal some regimes are across the world, and that, I mean, it's frankly disgraceful. I'm actually all for putting incarcerated people. I mean, I don't think she should have been incarcerated to begin with, but I am for putting incarcerated people to productive uses, whatever that may be. But on the other hand, they've got like labor camps and work camps that just sound like brutal conditions, and I believe her. It just sounds absolutely disgraceful. So hopefully this whole thing will bring light to, you know, that not everywhere is America or Canada, and in some places the jails are jail. And just a brutal, brutal condition. So I hope she makes it out okay, and I hope this brings the spotlight to these issues in Russia. But I'm having a feeling that maybe this might now help out her own situation. I don't expect Russia to get any better anytime soon. And it seems Putin seems to enjoy being this bad guy or this, you know, extremely tough guy on, quote, criminals. I don't know.
I mean, it's interesting to see where this story goes, because the if you think about it, for until the recent controversies that Russia has been involved in sort of in the news, right? So I'm thinking about like the gay rights issues that are surrounding the Olympics coming up in Sochi. And is it Sochi? Is it the name of the Russian place? Yeah, I think it's Sochi. You know, the gay rights issues surrounding that, and then the, you know, of course, them, you know, getting involved in the chemical weapons disarmament in Syria. All of a sudden, Russia is in the news for lots of reasons that are not Pussy Riot, and this was the story in the major Western media regarding with, you know, involving Russia for a while. So it's going to be interesting to see if the continuing developments in this actually manage to break through, or if all the other stuff that, you know, that is also important, of course, that Russia is making news with is going to start to overshadow this. Like, you know, I'd hate to see, you know, the continued plight of this band just be, you know, swept under the rug because, hey, there's, you know, geopolitics happening, you know?
Do you think, do you think she's exaggerating the conditions? With how specific she is, I don't think she is exaggerating, like, these work camp conditions.
I have no way of knowing. I don't see why that, you know, my impression is that, you know, it's not an exaggeration, but then my experience with the Russian prison system is pretty low. So,
oh, I did a little bit of time a while back. You know, a lot of knife fights, a lot of a vodka downing. It was a dark time, Adam. I hope this young lady gets out all right. I mean, I remember they gave her a sentence of like a year. Everyone's like, oh, well, I mean, a year is terrible for just a speech crime or whatever. But a year is only a year. But a year in Russian prison seems like a long time, you know? So, I mean, damn. 16 to 17 hours a day. Damn.
Yeah, that is horrible.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that aren't horrible, Andrew W.K.
that was the worst seg we've ever done.
Well, not only that, is we really could have, not put these two articles together. Andrew W.K. is putting out a book. It's called The Party Bible. Here's what Andrew W.K. says. This book is the culmination of my entire career as a professional partier. In fact, this book is the culmination of my entire life. Everything that has ever and never happened has led me to being in the perfect position to receive the contents of the Party Bible and write it down once and for all. This is a powerful and dangerous feeling, but it's definitely meant to happen. I'm grateful to all my party friends for requesting this book. This is our book.
As super amusing as I find Andrew W.K., I don't really know if this is a thing that is going to be all that engaging. I think Andrew's, weird little Zen party cones that he puts out, they work better on Twitter, at least in my head, than in, you know, 500-page book form. Not that I've seen the book. I'm just speculating that, you know, it's easy for him to come out then and go, you know, and say something weird on Twitter like, party tip, you know, wear your hat upside down, and then just that be it. I don't really know how you expand on some of the stuff like that, like he intends to, but, you know.
I'm actually hoping he does, a extended essay, and, I'm almost hoping this is, like, the art of war, but the art of partying. Like, he really, maybe breaks it up into, the seven houses of partying, you know.
And sure, then, yeah, but my worry here is that, like, a lot of and I know that Andrew is not necessarily in this camp, but like a lot of people that have become sort of like weird new media celebrities these days, guys that have had, like, you know, popular, you know, little kind of like OneNote Tumblr sites or like weird little Twitter accounts or, you know, comedy accounts on Twitter and stuff like that, that end up going and doing a book or getting a book deal out of it. Often the thing that they put out in a book deal is some sort of, you know, accumulation of the collective stuff that they were either tweeting or tumbling, is that what you would say? You know, or tumblogging, let's say. But out of the context of being like a piecemeal bit of information that you would get amongst other stuff during the day, it, you know, it doesn't necessarily work that well. So I'm hoping it's more than just like the Andrew WK Twitter account in book form, because but I mean, like, he usually throws himself into like bizarre projects with a lot of gusto. So, you know, hey, it might be the art of war.
We'll see. You know, when I interviewed him about, I guess, 2 years ago, maybe it was a year ago, he was really cool. But I tried to pin down what actually his philosophy is on partying, and he wouldn't really get specific. So I wonder if he'll get specific here or if it'll just be like a bunch of jokes. It could work either way, but I'm interested to see what happens. Related to Andrew WK, I'm super excited. This Sunday, I'm seeing Andrew WK with Marky Ramone doing all Ramone songs. So I'm super excited to see that.
Oh, that would be super fun.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. I think it's going to be awesome.
Wow. Where's that?
TLA, Philadelphia. The Ants might be there. It's like a short tour that he's doing with Marky Ramone's Blitzkrieg. I mean, honestly, like, see, that's what I like. See, that's one of the things that I really respect about Andrew WK is, on one hand, he's kind of a one-note jokester. It's like, party, you know, that's what I do is I party. But on the other hand, he actually is, like, willing. He's in the sense of a true artist, he's willing to try to experiment with many different forms. For example, he's going on tour with Marky Ramone and doing Ramone songs. Why not? You know, he did all Japanese. He's done like two or three all Japanese J-pop songs. Why not? He produced an album for Lee Scratch Perry. Why not? On one hand, you can say, well, it's all gimmicky and has no substance. But on the other hand, you could say he's trying to do the Frank Zappa and really just trying to expand and find art that hasn't really been created yet. So we'll see.
Yeah, and that's kind of been my impression, is that, like, that, you know, he has really purposefully picked and chosen, you know, strange, interesting projects and ways of expressing himself that I think, to the frustration of some people, you know, have not been, you know, making another rock record, and that has, I think, given more of the impression that he is kind of like that one note guy than otherwise, because, like, he had that, what, like that album of piano music that he put out. You know, he was
right.
He was involved in that. Oh, there was that, like, 24-hour drumming thing or something like that. Like,
that was cool. I watched that online. He wanted to drum 24 hours straight, and I watched a significant portion of that. And I'm actually, like, I would think that he would actually, like, drum, like, really slow, like, bump, bump, bump. Like, that's how he would make it 24 hours. But he was going, like, bump, for 24 hours. It was pretty amazing. What they did is they would bring in other drummers to, like, energize him, and he would drum with those drummers. I think Marky Ramone was there, but some other drummers were there, too. So they would, like, mirror each other to keep him, like, energized for 24 hours. It was cool.
Yeah, so, there's hope. This book might be cool.
Fun fact, if you ever get to meet Andrew WK, talk to him about Napalm Death's Harmony Corruption album. He's way into that album, and actually, he is extremely knowledgeable on the Florida death metal grindcore scene. I mean, Napalm Death's English, but they recorded that album in Florida, and he knows so much about that stuff. So if you really want to, like, surprise him and, like, make his day, talk to him about that stuff, and he'll get really excited.
Cool. All right. What else we got? We have a song? We have a story?
I guess we can do this one more story, and then we'll play a classic punk rock jam.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. You take this one.
Okay, and what is quite decisive in the punk rock community, I've got my opinions on this, but I'll pause to see what Adam White thinks of this, is Frank Turner and John Allen just covered Counting Crows in Germany. They covered the band Counting Crows while in Germany. They covered the song Mr. Jones while during their tour together. I know right now Frank Turner is huge in England. He, like, played the Olympics and he plays like stadiums or something. In America, he's not quite as big, but a lot of American people enjoy, and Canadian, I should say North American people, enjoy the Frank Turner brand of punk rock and neo-folk. So, Adam, what's your opinion of Frank Turner and John Allen covering Counting Crows? Of course, we all know, actually, maybe the kids are too young. I don't know. Counting Crows was a very popular alt-rock band in the early to mid-90s. Adam, do you think the kids these days are hip to Counting Crows? Not in that they liked him, but they know who they are, or they understand the significance of Frank Turner covering this band?
I doubt that there is... I don't know. I doubt that, like, the kids these days... I don't even really know what that means. But, no, they're probably not hip to the Counting Crows. I mean,
I'm thinking about Brittany Strummer's 21, right? That means she was born in 92. Which basically, she was an infant when this song came out.
Yeah, so I'm looking at myself, and like I remember this song a lot from when I was a kid, and I was like, I was 11 when this song came out. So, you know, to me, it was one of those, you know, poppy alt rock, I guess, songs that was happening at that time. So I'm thinking, like, Frank has got to be my age, if not, like, a year, maybe you're younger than me or you're older than me. So, you know, he kind of hits that same spot where there's you know, this is one of these catchy songs that would have been around from his youth. You may be more learned on the Crows than I am, but I don't really think that there's much of a, I don't think there's much symbolism or anything here, except that, you know, these are musicians of a certain age that recognize this song, so they're going to do it, right? Like, I'm not perceiving there being a deeper level to this, but you tell me.
Well, I'm glad you phrased it in that context. I looked up, he's 31, so he's our age.
Yeah, all right.
Here's how I did not enjoy this cover. I'm not saying that, you know, he shouldn't have done this or whatever, but I'm saying, you know, Counting Crows in 93 were basically the epitome of corporate rock. Without question, Counting Crows is a corporate rock band. I don't find them to be particularly interesting as a band. I don't find them to be particularly clever or groundbreaking or even exciting. I find them to be a boring, bland band that is made specifically to hit as wide an audience as possible without really doing anything that interesting. I mean, I don't hate Counting Crows, but I don't like them. And so for Frank Turner to cover this band says it. I mean, it could just be like, it might just be a song he likes. Like, let me think. Who do I like that's kind of cheesy? I mean, let me think. I've got such a high opinion on myself. I don't think anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, do you have the list? But the
point is this, is maybe he's just saying, I like this song, so let's just do it for fun. But I get nervous, and maybe I'm being too close-minded when I say this, but I get nervous when I see punk rock guys incorporating mainstream stuff that is the complete opposite of punk rock artistic expression or ideals and portraying it as something that's good or interesting, because I feel that it might water down what actually is good or daring or interesting in punk rock. For example, anymore, almost everybody that reads punk news does not like the Sex Pistols, but they like the Counting Crows, and that seems entirely backwards to me. You dig?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from there. I don't want to read too much into this because, I mean, for all we know, it's just something they're doing as a lark, as part of a larger show, and they didn't mean it to have any huge amount of significance to it. So I don't want to read.
Very true.
I don't want to read into it what is not meant. I mean, like my opinion is pretty much similar to you. Is that, like, you know, when I was like 14 and working in like the produce section of a grocery store, this was probably the song that was playing on Muzak, right? So it's one of those sort of things. So it's so long as it, you know, it doesn't become a, you know, Frank's next single or something like that. I'm willing to just say, you know, they're doing it for nostalgic reasons.
My point is, I just hope it's not symptomatic of the current collective punk consciousness. That's what I'm saying.
No, which is interesting, because when it feels like when, I don't know, it feels like when I'm at shows these days, I don't see as many cover songs, I think, as I'd like to. And I'm really of the opinion that, like, you know, bands that are not great yet can really help hone their craft and get to where they're going by covering stuff that they like and that influences them and et cetera, et cetera. And I really like seeing covers, you know, from that perspective, where you're paying homage to kind of old stuff or whatever. I'm not a huge fan of the, this was really more symptomatic of the 90s kind of thing, you know, of the jokey punk cover of a pop song. You know what I mean?
I don't think this was jokey, though. I don't think they were like, like, you know, a lot of the ska bands would be like, this song sucks, let's do a ska version. And people be like, aha, that's funny. But half the time, people really like that song anyways. Like, aha, take me on, you know? But I think I got the impression that these guys genuinely like Counting Crows. And not that that's the worst sit in the world. I just get a little nervous that this bland type of music would overtake other bands. It would overtake other bands' willingness to be daring or risky. And I mean, like, not that you can't cover stupid bands, you won't cover stupid bands, but of all the bands to cover and make interesting music, Crass, The Clash, Effed Up, Career Suicide, World in Front of Friendship Society, Mischief Brew, Bouncing Souls, Hot Water Music, you know, Counting Crows just seems kind of whack to me. But I mean, I don't want to say he's a bad artist for doing this. I'm just saying I hope this is not symptomatic of the current mind process of a lot of people involved in punk rock, that this bland radio stuff is anything to be applauded.
All right, John, I'm having, as you can hear, some sort of horrible coughing fit.
Well, Adam, let me talk while you recover.
I'm going to go run away and deal with this. You talk about a classic song people should hear.
I will, but I will rewind 1 second because, Adam, you said that you wish more bands would do more covers. Well, Adam, I am always at least 2 or 3 years behind the hype train. And I've been meaning to check out Titus Andronicus for a while, and I finally saw them live on the last day of their current tour, where it was one of the most interesting and one of the best shows I've ever – top 10% of shows I've ever seen. They played for an hour and 50 minutes, which was insane. They did a lot – honestly, I don't really know any of their songs, but they did some like really fast punk rock songs and some extended songs. They were really awesome. They sounded great, and they also did 3 covers, 2 which I can remember. One was a cover of R.E.M.'s It's the End of the World as We Know It. I don't like that song. I don't like R.E.M., but I think Titus Andronicus, they did like a hardcore version of it, and it made perfect sense, and it was awesome. And they also did like a 20-minute version of Velvet Underground's Sister Ray. And at the end of Sister Ray, like the band just experiments with like feedback for like 5 or 10 minutes. They just pulled it out for so long that it was so awesome. They just like went completely off the scale of music and just like experimented with sound itself, which I found way more interesting than covering the Counting Crows. So I got to say, Titus Andronicus puts on a wild, wild show.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that. I know you said that you were going, and I was like, uh-oh, John.
It was great, Adam. I mean, it wasn't my favorite show ever, but top 10%. It was a great, great show, and I recommend anybody go see Titus Andronicus. Very, very interesting, very, very exciting, very new, but very well-written music. But what I would say is maybe you can shed some light onto this. Have you seen them live before?
No, I've missed them every time that I've had a chance to see them live.
I wonder if some of the listeners can shed some light onto this. Is who's the man? Patrick Stickles? Is that his name? Is he like a weird guy? He was acting like really weird. I mean, the music was great. So I don't know if he is weird or if he was drunk or that's just how he acts. But like before the show started, he like walked on stage like 3 times, just kind of stared around, then walked off stage and then walked back on, stared around and then walked back off stage. And then when he walked on to actually play, he said he lost his pants. He was wearing somebody else's sweatpants. And the other guys in the band seemed to be mad at him. But I don't know if that was like on act or if they're just weird guys. But like the show was amazing. So I'm just like, is he an odd guy?
All indications are that there's some... You know, he's a bit of a character, and that there is some level of kind of like wacky eccentrism going on there. I mean, it may partially be an act, but just from what I've seen in interviews, is that he's his own guy, loses his pants sometimes.
I thought he was drunk, but he was so quick with the zingers. I'm like, well, he can't be that drunk if he's zinging out, if he's coming up with all these like clever statements just like off the top of the cuff of his head, you know, off the cuff. But he also like rambled for like 5 to 10 minutes a couple of times, but they were great. I mean, so so not only is the music great, it's just a very interesting show. So I recommend it. Not related at all, but as a lot of the punk news listeners might not know, way back in the 80s, early 80s, there was a band called Bow Wow Wow. I guess most people probably know this song, I Want Candy. And a lot of people, including myself until a couple of years ago, might used to have thought that Bow Wow Wow was like an 80s one-hit wonder. Well, little did I know at the time that Bow Wow Wow is actually a pretty punk rock band with some pretty punk rock credentials. They were managed by Malcolm McLaren of the Sex Pistols, and they also had members of Adam and the Ants as their backing band. But on top of that, they're just a fantastic band. They put out about 4 albums worth of material. They put out 3 official albums and a whole bunch of other singles. But they are a phenomenal band. They're based in kind of like tribal energetic drumming, while lead singer Annabella Nguyen, who is, I think, born in England but of Burmese descent, or she was born in Burma and then quickly moved to England. She's one of the greatest singers I've ever heard. And if you like No Doubt or Gwen Stefani's singing style, you can definitely see where Gwen Stefani was influenced. The reason I bring this up is because for the first time in a long time, Annabella Nguyen, Bow Wow Wow's been broken up a while, but Annabella Nguyen is doing a whole bunch of shows in the West Coast this week, and after that, some shows in New York. I'll be at the show in New York just because I'm so excited to see it. It's just her and her backing band. There's another band called Bow Wow Wow, but that's actually just the bass of Bow Wow Wow and other people. So I think the one to see is the Annabella one. So I'm super excited to see it. So I wrote her a quick little email, and she said that we could play one of the rarer songs. So what we're going to do is play the cassette only for off the album Your Cassette Pet, which was cassette only. We're going to play that version of C30, C60, C90 Go. That song is particularly special to me because when I interviewed Jack Terrycloth of World Inferno Friendship Society, we got to talking that we're both huge fans of Bow Wow Wow. And then that night when World Inferno played their music, they did the intro to C30, C60, C90 Go as a tribute to our conversation, which thrilled me. So this is the rare version off Your Cassette Pet of Bow Wow Wow doing C30, C60, C90 Go, and you can see Annabella Nguyen, the vocalist for Bow Wow Wow, on the West Coast this week and New York the week after that. Thank you.
John, I want to complain about meth for a minute.
By all means.
Before people were making it, you used to be able to go get cold medicine that worked. But now you can't because they took it all off the shelves and replaced all the good methy ingredients with horrible ingredients that don't actually work. And then people like me have persistent colds and cough incessantly during podcasts. So meth heads.
I think you just came up with the world's most popular next sitcom, a guy that makes a bunch of meth illegally so he can boil it down to its essential elements and make better cold medicine.
Oh, God. We used to live in a golden age of cold medicine. Then I just removed all the good meth ingredients and replaced it with sawdust, and then here I am. So anyways, that was Bow Wow Wow. Here we are.
I gotta say, kids, don't write off Bow Wow Wow. They really are a great, phenomenal, unique band.
So we should probably continue this podcast.
Let's do it.
All right, so our next story here. The Larry Arms, the Lawrence Arms, if you weren't being formal, have finished recording their upcoming full length, their sixth record. It's done, it's mixed, it's sequenced. There is no official release date or title or cover art or track listing or anything of the sort, but it's done, it exists. So there you go, get excited, because you always get really excited, punk news. I don't really know if we have anything to say about this, but, you know, are you excited? Is this a band that you're into, John? You seem to be a little bit, you know, further out in the woods.
Yeah, I think I am. I'm not trying to be a hater on this band. I've just never really caught. I know Chris Moran wanted me to listen to their third album, I guess. Is that O Calcutta? Is that the third album?
It's one of the more recent ones. I'm not sure of the sequencing, but sure.
Yeah. So I have to listen to that one I don't know. I don't want to hate on this band, because I do think this band is sort of clever and doing what they think is interesting. It's just not my bag. What do you want me to say?
Hey,
it's
that's
not
my bag. That's the most diplomatic thing you could say. So, anyways, new Lawrence Arms album. It's coming out soon. We don't know anything about it except that it exists. So, there you go. O Calcutta was their fifth album. It was the most recent one in 2006. Christ. Took them long enough. Anyways,
I will say, I won't give any specifics, but listen up, punk news readers, we've got a few interesting things with this band planned, so be sure to stay on tap.
I'm just gonna leave it to resonate there. Okay, so that was Lawrence Arms. Nothing really quite to say about them, but you're gonna have something to say about this one. So the Morrissey book is back. So, if you guys will recall, last Friday it was announced that Morrissey had decided to stop the release of his autobiography via Penguin Books, and as is the tumultuous and passionate way of life relating to all things Morrissey, the Morrissey fan site True to You, which regularly receives dispatches from his Mosness, has now stated that the book deal is back on for release in the UK and Europe. Penguin Books is still to be the publisher. There's currently no distribution or anything like that for it in the States, or I presume Canada, and they're still trying to work out a deal for that. So there you go. The Morrissey book is back. I don't know exactly if they stripped out any of the offending things that Morrissey took issue with late in the game, but it is back. So John, the Morrissey book, this is your ball.
Well, but with Morrissey, he's such a fascinating character, because literally on Friday he was like, "I'm killing the book. I don't want the book to come out." And then on Monday he's like, "The book is coming out. I want the book to come out." So he's such a dramatist. You know, everything is so just. I wouldn't say I'm a mega fan of Morrissey, but I would say I'm a very big fan of Morrissey, particularly his EPs where he gets weirder. I think Morrissey is one of the greatest voices of his generation, singing technique-wise. I don't agree with a lot of what he says politically, but I certainly respect him as an artist, and I respect him as somebody who says what he's thinking, or at least what he wants people to think what he's thinking. But everything with him is surrounded with so much drama. He's a ridiculous human being. Like, when he canceled a tour and then he was back on, then he canceled it again. So he scheduled another tour, but then he canceled that one. He's literally canceled like his last six shows in the Bay Area, which is like in a row, which is ridiculous. I'm excited to see what this 660 page book says. Although I bet you it's going to be a letdown. I think everybody is thinking it's going to be like, you know, why Morrissey and Johnny Marr hate each other so much, and it's not going to like explain any of that.
It's going to be mostly about like veganism.
It probably will be
586 pages about that.
I think what's even more interesting about this though is on Friday when he killed it, it was supposed to come out like on the next Tuesday, but they hadn't printed up any books. So obviously it's got to take more than 3 days to like books. I mean, this is going to sell, I don't know, 100,000 copies, maybe more, right? I mean, Morrissey's pretty big.
It would have been way more amusing if he would have had like the whole run of books pulped. And then the next week.
And then on Monday, he's like, put it back out. Put it back out. So, I mean, I just think what it is Morrissey has enough pull, and he knows that he's got enough pull, is that even if he can wants to breach the contract or, you know, fiddle around, they'll have to concede to what he wants. Basically, it was a money issue. He said it was a content issue. I really don't think so. Because if the books had – well, I mean, I think he wanted more money for certain distributions, because why would on Friday he be like – Actually, no, I take it all back. I do think it was a content thing. Because as we know, on Friday, the book hadn't been printed yet, even though it was supposed to come out on Tuesday. But on Monday, everything was cleared up. So what that means is they were probably arguing about something in the book, and so the publisher just said, okay, we'll take it out. You know, and so we said, fine. Whereas if it was a money issue, I think the argument would have went on for more than 3 days, you know.
One would think.
So, yeah, I'll probably get an imported copy from England if it's not too insanely. Well, I'll wait till I see what everybody says about it, and then I'll get a copy if it's interesting. Autobiography-wise, I can recommend the Keith Richards autobiography. That's a great autobiography. Meanwhile, Adam, I was kind of disappointed. Very few people clicked on my link at the bottom of this article. Adam, did you click on that link?
Sure.
Go ahead and click on that link.
Okay, hold on.
Adam is clicking on this link, and people, I suggest you click on this link. September 16, 2013 is the article. It's a wonderful photo of Morrissey and the rest of his band.
Great. How recent is this?
It's pretty recent because it was on the – I think it's on the inside of I'm Wrapping My Arms Around Paris single. I got that single, and I opened it up, and I got quite the eyeful.
Morrissey's looking pretty good.
What I like is the guy that's really not looking that good, he doesn't even care. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm just going to let it all hang out, you know?
Well.
So, Adam, don't describe this picture. I want the people to go online and look at it and experience it as I did the first time, not expecting it at all. I just... getting an eyeful.
Did the readers comment on that picture at all?
They didn't. But honestly, it's because I put it at the bottom like an Easter egg. I figured people would read through. But I think people just read like the first sentence and then comment on how much they hate Morrissey. Or more so, how much they hate veganism.
Yeah, they're all just arguing about vegan paper.
I was pretty proud of this article. I mean, I don't want to jump this out too much, but I liked my wording. It was like the AV Club. I like my link at the end.
It is a nice article. I have to tell you.
Well, so. Thank you. But also, like my picture of him in sort of like a troll type pose or something, you know. So that was my hard work. Thanks for appreciating that, Adam.
Yeah, I do appreciate it. All right, now what everyone tunes into this show for? You're going to talk about Off for the next 45 minutes.
Correct. And I will say, I'm excited because Off has released a new song. It may or may not be Off the new album, but it is Off, Grand Theft Auto 5, I think. Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 5. It's a song called What's Next. It's a really good song. It's just typical Off. I think it's a little bit even more spastic than the last record. I'm excited for the Off third record. But really, I mean, I don't have a PlayStation 3, but I kind of want to play Grand Theft Auto 5 just so I can hear Keith Morris be the DJ for the Channel X station. Like when I had Grand Theft Auto 3, and no, I had Grand Theft Auto, what's the third Grand Theft Auto 3? It's like San Andreas. they had like celebrity like DJs, and like they make like one of them was George Clinton and stuff, and they would like talk about the songs and be funny. This one's got Keith Morris, who's like a punk rock radio DJ, talking about like punk rock songs that he's playing. So I'd love to hear that.
I did not know that. I have never played one of these games. So, okay, cool.
Honestly, I hope Keith Morris got a nice chunk of change out of it too.
Oh, that's probably a nice little revenue stream for, you know, some of these bands that, you know, no one buys records anymore. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's a good song. It sounds like an off song. I don't think I can make determinations of what this band is doing based on one song anyways, because they're all like a minute long, and then you really need them in like a batch of 30.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good off song. Good. That's more would be good. And then, yeah, that was the most non-committal thing I've ever said, but you know.
Well, if anything, I think this song sort of answered the question of the conversation Adam, you and I had about 2 or 3 months ago. I was saying, do you think the next off album will be like just another off minute and a half banger after minute and a half banger, or will they get weirder? And it's looking like the next off album is just going to continue in the vein that off has been in, and that's a good thing. You know, I love off. First two records were fantastic records, so I think the third one's going to be a fantastic record as well.
All right. Well, I think we have, one more story this week?
One more story.
Yeah, all right. So we recently published an article as part of our series of content that we're putting out in the lead up to the Fest 12, which we are sponsoring amongst some others. And this was our top 12 under the radar bands to watch at the Fest 12. And it is a list that you can find on the org, and we'll give you the band's name, where they're from, what their last record that came out was, and their set time at the fest if you happen to be there, where you can catch them. So on the list, we have Lipstick Homicide from Iowa City, Have Mercy from Baltimore, Nona from Westchester.
Well, that's where I live.
Is that where you live?
Yeah, I live in Glen Mills, which is like 3 minutes from Westchester.
Oh, there you go. Donovan Wolfington from New Orleans, Old Flings from Asheville, North Carolina, War on Women from Baltimore, Placeholder from Lancaster.
Oh, that's near me too. That's like an hour away.
All of our stuff is just stuff from Pennsylvania these days. Human Parts from Gainesville. They're locals for this. Pale Angels, which is a band that Mike Yurg is in, which is from Brooklyn, New Brunswick, New Jersey, and Swansea, Wales. So there
that's
you go.
Close. It's like 90 minutes to me. Also, like 18 hours.
Yeah. Wales. Yeah. Who else? Kayatana from Philadelphia.
Close to me. That's half hour from me.
That's the only measure of quality that we have for any of these bands, is how close they are to John Gentile.
Actually, I saw them open for Swearin' and Waxahachie. You know, but people love those bands. I got to say, Kayatana is kind of a band to catch. When I first saw them, I mean, however you describe a band, the band, you're describing them wrong. But when I saw Kayatana, it was kind of like a Four Non Blondes, like 90s alt rock thing. But it was pretty, I mean, but like in the Vicious side, not in like the Cannon Crow side. So it was cool. I think they've got a little bit more room to go before they're really there. But I mean, I think this band could be really fantastic.
That was the impression that I got listening to them. Also on the list, we have Save Ends from Boston and the Smith Street Band from Melbourne, Australia. Do you know how far are you from Melbourne?
18. Actually, I think that's like 18 hours flight. I think Wales is really like 6 or 7 hours.
Well then. So anyway, did you check any of this stuff out? Are you aware of any of these bands? I mean, some of them are kind of local to you, so.
Yeah, I'm aware of Kayatana. They were cool. I think they've got some real potential. Pale Angels is cool. That's kind of Mikey Erg's like harder, nastier band.
I thought Pale Angels is really interesting because it is not like Ramones core. And that's usually what you expect, like Mike Yurg projects to you know kind of gravitate towards. So it's really neat.
And then also, let's see here. I don't know about this band Nona, but I should check them out because they literally live like 5 minutes from me. And I think War on Women is kind of like a hardcore band, right?
Yeah, War on Women, and we're gonna play War on Women song after this. War on Women is completely badass. If there is. I think of any of the bands that are on this list, they're the one that is going for the throat more than anyone there. It is entirely obvious once you listen to their record, which was Improvised Weapons that came out. It was an EP on Exotic Fever. It is entirely obvious, evident when you listen to that, why, you know, Propaganda's Chris Hanna is such a devoted fan of these guys. Like, just, you know, completely non-apologetically political, angry, angry in a way that a lot of punk bands are not. Where, like, a lot of bands, you know, they really seem like they're genuinely enjoying themselves, you know, playing music, even though it's music of the more aggressive variety. War on Women just seems pissed off. And so it's good to get that from a band these days. So anyway, so War on Women is really cool. We're going to play something by them in a minute.
And Human Parts is playing. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of this band, although I did kind of like their first song. This is a band a lot of people are going to watch because it includes Andrew Seward, one of the original guys from Against Me. Isn't he one of the original guys from Against Me, or one of the early guys, or long running at least?
I don't know if he was there at the very, very beginning, because the very, very beginning was pretty much, you know, like Tom and then like a bag of potatoes. But yeah, he's been the bass player for really the majority of what people know as Against Me.
Yeah, so I would check that band out, even though I know nothing about them, just to see what I can see, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on this list that when I checked it out, is really good. I mean, the one thing about this list that really struck me is that I guess I don't know if this was the plan, and it probably wasn't because we don't really plan anything. But a lot of female fronted bands on this list, and a lot of the female fronted bands are really good. Lipstick Homicide was super fun. And you know, it's kind of like the straight ahead, you know. I want to say like late, you know, early 90s Lookout style kind of pop punk. Their records that they've got out that you can find online are really cool. Donovan Wolfington, I think, has a totally fascinating record. They have the worst band name ever, but the record they had come out, which is called Stop Breathing, which you can check out on Bandcamp, or you can actually download it for free off their label site, is all over the place. Like, one song to the next does not necessarily sound like the product of the same band. Really kind of hooky, raw stuff. It reminded me a little bit of Joyce Manor, as, you know, from time to time. I think it has a similar aesthetic to Joyce Manor. Very much in that young punk rock that, you know, probably listened to a lot of Weezer's Pinkerton back in the day, but instead of taking like the worst qualities from it, decided just to use the fact that it's a little bit all over the place and incorporated that into their sound. I think that record is really good. It's probably going to stick around come year end list time for me. So anyways, yeah, Donovan Wolfington, go listen to that. The Smith Street Band that's on this list is probably the most obviously punk news pleasing thing that we could have added on here. I don't know if you've heard these guys. Have you heard this?
Smith Street Band? No, I haven't.
No, okay. So they're like a folk punk band from Australia. They're touring with or they have toured with Frank Turner quite a bit, and it's completely obvious. I mean, they have like a little bit of like that kind of like Frank Turner folk punkness to them, but a little bit less singer-songwriter, a little bit more kind of on the full band stint. So I think that they stick a little bit closer to, I think, what you could call more textbook kind of punk rock than what Turner does these days. But very similar aesthetic to him, that very instantly likable, you can't really argue with it, warm sing-alongness that you get out of Turner. All of my ways of describing music tonight are completely fucked up, but just, you listen to the Smith Street Band and it's just that you just think to yourself, punk news will love this.
Yeah, honestly, I don't anymore, when you get older you're supposed to get softer and more gentler stuff, but anymore I just want the more vicious and the nastier stuff. I feel as though my new nastiness quotient isn't being met.
Well then, I think that we should jump into a song, because I think that the song from War on Women In fact, this holy pee from War on Women, honestly, should help your nastiness quotient. nice. it should meet that quota. So this song is called Confess. It is by War on Women from, I totally lost where I was just reading, Baltimore? Were they from Baltimore?
They're from Baltimore.
They're from Baltimore. So anyways, this is from Improvised Weapons, the EP that War on Women put out on the Exotic Fever label. So check this out. If you see them at the fest, they are playing Saturday at 6:10 p.m. at the Atlantic. So here you go. This is Confess by War on Women. And it's going to be the last thing we're going to do. We're going to see you guys next week on the Punk News Podcast.
Nasty. We will confess. Confess with your mouth.